I'm pulling on my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for another drive to work. Okay, so today, I realized I did an article a little while ago where it was a two-part article that I talked about the design innovation of every year. And I realized I missed something important. And that is the six edition rules. So I decided, as penance for forgetting it, I'm going to do an entire podcast on six edition rules. What were the six edition rules? What changed? Why did we do it? All of that will be today's topic. So everything you ever wanted to know about the six edition rules. Okay, let's start with, what are the six edition rules? So in 1999, one of the core sets called Sixth Edition came out. And along with it came a series of rules changes. So let me get into the bigger picture. I have to go back to Alpha to sort of explain why Sixth Edition rules were so important. Okay, so when Richard was first making the game of Magic, remember, he was making it to be an average game that you would play in the store. You know, you go and you spend your $20 and you have a bunch of cards, and then mostly you're playing with your game group at home. And Richard thought in that dynamic, where the game is just a small kitchen table game, that part of the fun of a modular game might be figuring out what happens when weird interactions happen. And so there was a rule book. Alpha came with a rule book, but the rule book just explained the basics. And the idea is, if card A and card B do something weird, hey, you, the playgroup, figure out what's going on. I think Richard had always sort of, it had been fun for him when they played games and weird interactions came up. And I think Richard understood that more interactions would come up. You know, Magic by its nature, like I said, it's modular. There's a lot of computorics to it. You know, there's lots of cards that connect with other cards. But I think he really thought that the idea of what happened, what interactions happen, that that could be part of the experience. And that you and your friends figuring out that social, he really thought that that could be part of it. But once again, Richard did not picture what Magic became. Nobody could. You can't assume you're making a phenomenon. And one of the things that happened when Magic got as big as it did is a lot of the gameplay left the kitchen table. Not that there's still lots of kitchen table play. But there's a lot of organized play. There's sanctioned play with tournaments. And the idea that I would go play somebody that I don't know, that's not a friend, that I'm at a store, a pickup game or a tournament, or maybe there's a game night where I could, you know, go and people are all meeting at the same time. But once you live in a world where Magic gets that big, where there's interactions, there's tournaments with real stakes on the line, the rules, you want the rules to be a little cleaner. A lot of the way the rules were made when Magic first got made was they were made to maximize each card. That each card would get a ruling that sort of maximized the card in the vacuum. So Tom Wiley, who was the first rules manager, once made a flow chart for the original rules that he put in the Duelist. And he made it look like a rat maze, because Tom was very subtly saying that the rules were kind of like a rat maze. Because each decision got made based on the card, you had this thing where things were non-intuitive because different cards would function differently. And so something that worked one way on one card wouldn't work the same way on another card. So a lot of early Magic, once again, this is no slight against Richard. Richard could not have predicted what the game became. He designed the game to be what he thought it would be, which is what most normal games are. And when it got to the size and scope that it got, it needed... Like, one of the things we spent a lot of time on in the early days was sort of making things work more intuitively, making, like, having continuity, like, in the rules or, like, in the color pie. You know, I spent a lot of time and other people early on just making the color pie a little more cohesive. And, like, there's certain colors don't do certain things and certain colors are, like, a lot of it was there, but the continuity wasn't there. And that... One of the things early Magic did was say, okay, let's have the same things work the same. Colors work the same. Rules work the same. There's rules for rarity that work the same. Card types work the same. That we sort of wanted things to, once you learn how something worked, we wanted that knowledge to apply more. We didn't want to teach you a rule for one card, and the next time you have a new thing, you have to learn it all over again. We wanted to be consistent. And so the idea behind the sixth edition rule change was, okay, can we revamp the rules and design them in such a way that it is, that once you learn the basics of the rule set, you can assume how the rules work. You can read a new card and not having to read the rules, just knowing the basis of what existed, that you could play the new card. And you can fit, you know, most of the time, and now Magic is complicated. There's a lot of moving pieces. Even now, there are still rulings and stuff we have to do. But a lot of the basics, the rules being consolidated, worked on a lot of the basics. So the 6th edition rule change was the biggest of its kind. In fact, of all the rule changes, Magic has gone through, I would say, 2 big rule changes and a bunch of small rule changes. The second biggest was Magic 2010. But that was not as big as the 6th edition rules. In fact, one of the biggest things about Magic 2010, as we'll find out, is undoing one of the rules of 6th edition rules. Okay, so I'm going to walk through all the changes, or most of the changes. I might miss a few minor changes. There were a lot of moving pieces. But these are what I see as the major changes to the 6th edition rules. And I will stress, if you haven't been playing Magic since 1999, a lot of this will just be, yeah, that's how the rules work. Meaning, you've learned to play Magic. The things that were not true until Magic, until 6th edition, you know, a lot of these might seem like, yeah, that's how Magic works. Well, it wasn't always how Magic works. Part of the lesson of today. Okay, probably the biggest thing the 6th edition rules did is they introduced the stack. And the idea of the stack is that all spells and abilities go in a singular place. There's an order to them. Last in, first out. I think borrowed from computing. So, to explain the difference, I'm going to talk about how card interactions worked pre this rule and after. Okay, so my card in question is, I'm going to bolt your creature. You have a creature that is a 3/3 creature. I'm going to bolt your creature. And you respond by casting Giant Growth. Okay? Before the 6th edition rules, before the stack existed, there was something known as as batches. And the idea is damage stayed to the end. So the idea was if I bolted your creature, so there's 2 different versions of this. There is I bolt your creature and you giant growth in response, and you giant growth your creature and I bolt it in response. So under the rules now, under the stack, it depends what order that happens in. Because the cards go on the stack in the order that you cast them and then happen in reverse order, last in, first out. So the idea is, let's say, for example, I have a 3/3 and you cast a lightning bolt on it and then I cast a giant growth on it. Under the current rules, okay, last in, first out, the giant growth happens, the creature's now a 6/6, then your lightning bolt happens, 3 damage is not enough to kill my 6/6, it survives. But if I giant growth my creature in response to you lightning bolt it, then the lightning bolt's last in, it happens first, the lightning bolt happens, does 3 damage to my 3/3, it gets destroyed, and then my giant growth will fizzle because there's no creature to giant growth. Okay, if you go back to before 6th edition, the way it worked was damage was always kept to the end. So no matter whether I giant growth first or last, my creature was going to survive because the damage from the lightning bolt wouldn't happen till the end. Meaning, my creature was always going to get the giant growth before the lightning bolt happened. And the damage prevention. Anyway, there were a lot of non-intuitive things. And, for example, the current system, like how the lightning bolt versus giant growth works, is a lot dependent on who's responding to what. Meaning, I want to do this. Well, wait, before you do this, I do that. And that's a lot more intuitive. Okay, other things that went with it. Batches and series were obsoleted. Mana sources, for a while, because they didn't. So the way the rules worked, well, let me jump real quickly. There used to be something called interrupts. Interrupts were, in 6th edition, interrupts got erased, turned into instants. The way instants and interrupts used to work was instants work like they do now. Interrupts could only be responded to by other interrupts. So if I cast a counter spell, you could only respond to me with another interrupt. Now, counter spells are interrupts, so you could respond to my counter spell with a counter spell, but there's certain things you couldn't respond to because they weren't interrupts. Because generating mana was important, like, for example, I need mana so that I can cast my counter spell. Spells that generated mana were normally also interrupts. And for a while, they were made what were called mana sources. Anyway, 6th edition cleaned that up. Interrupts got removed, turned into instants. One of my favorite things is Red Elemental Blast, which was in Alpha, was supposed to be an interrupt because it countered spells, but was accidentally listed as an instant. And then it got eroded to be an interrupt. But then with 6th edition rules, it got eroded back to an instant. So it's a card that was misprinted, except it is now not misprinted because the rules changed to make its misprint real. I always thought that was funny. The damage prevention stuff I just talked about was obsoleted. It changed like how the lightning bolt worked. It also changed how regeneration worked. It used to be that I didn't regenerate things till after it had taken damage. That the damage prevention happened at the end. So lightning bolts are damage. This is damage prevention, so slightly different. But what happened is, let's say, for example, you lightning bolted my 3-3, but it had regeneration on it. After my creature was taking the damage, I could use the regeneration, meaning there was an opportunity after damage to do healing. But under the stack, that doesn't work that way anymore. Damage is now targeted. Damage prevention is now targeted, and it tends to make more of what we call the shield. So the idea is, let's say I want to regenerate. The way it works now is, you cast Lightning Bolt on my creature with regenerate. I see that the Lightning Bolt is on the stack, meaning I understand my creature is about to die. So I spend the mana on the regeneration, and I make a regeneration shield. And what that means is, when it would go to the graveyard, instead, it gets, you know, it follows the rules of regeneration. It goes back to the battlefield, tap, removed from combat. But the idea essentially is, regeneration used to be, I'm about to die, I now regenerate. And now it's like, I sense that I'm about to die, so ahead of time, I sort of buff my creature, or I make a shield around my creature. It worked fine within the rules, and for most gameplay uses, it worked fine enough, meaning I see what's going to happen. But it didn't match the name regeneration as well, which was not ideal. Okay, the next thing that it introduced was the idea of triggered abilities. So if a card says when, whenever, or at, it becomes a triggered ability. And triggered abilities, like any spell or ability, goes on the stack. It's not resolved. Before, things were resolved mid-spell. That doesn't happen anymore. The idea now is things go in an order. Things are on the stack. Spells and abilities go on the stack. And whatever spell or ability was left in happens. And so there's an order for things happening. Under the system before 6th edition rules, things could happen while other things were happening. It got pretty messy. And once again, the stack, remember, uses all abilities. So they can be triggered abilities, activated abilities. Static abilities work a little bit differently. That gets into layers, but that layers is not a topic for today. Okay, another thing that it did is it cleaned up, it made the turn have 5 phases. The phases are beginning, main, combat, second main, and end step. Technically, I think it's pre-combat main phase and post-combat main phase, technically. Beginning phase has 3 steps: the untap step, the upkeep step, and the draw step. Upkeep is when you untap your things. I'm sorry, untap is when you untap your things. Upkeep is when certain, at beginning of turn, things happen, or sometimes upkeep costs happen. And then draw is when you draw your card. Then there are 2 main phases and a combat phase. Combat used to be part of the main phase. It was like a step of the main phase, I think, before 6th edition rules. It became its own phase. And instead of having 1 main phase in which combat was a subpart of it, there's 2 main phases, so there's a main phase before and after. Why 2 main phases? Basically because there's some things strategically you want to do before combat. For example, cast a haste creature. Buff my creature, so it's bigger in combat. But there's some things you want to do after combat that I for example, let's say in combat something happens, it allows me to then do things that take advantage of stuff that happened in combat. So they made two main phases so that you could do things before combat and do things after combat. Combat had five steps. Beginning of combat, declare attackers, declare blockers, combat damage, and end of combat. So the idea is I say, hey, I'm going to attack. That's when you can respond if you want with tapping effects or something. Something you want to do before I declare an attacker. Then I declare attackers. I say what my attackers are. Once again, that can be responded to. Then you say what your blockers are. That can be responded to. Then we have combat damage. All these can be responded to. And then end of combat is when all the stuff happens that lasts until the end of combat. The one other change that happened here is combat damage got put on the stack. This was a big difference in 6th edition. So what that meant is, let's say I have a creature that has a sack ability. I could attack with the creature. Let's say I have a 2-2 with the sack ability, you have a 2-2. I can, and you attack me with your 2-2. Under 6th edition rules, I could block your 2-2 with my 2-2, put damage on the stack, because damage, like spells and abilities, use the stack, and then after damage on the stack, I could sack my creature, either to ability it had or to another something else, but the point is I could sacrifice it, and because the damage was already on the stack, the damage would still happen. That was very non-intuitive. It really felt like you were sort of messing with people. Like, when you would do that to less experienced players, it felt like you were cheating. Well, your creature wasn't there to fight, so how did that creature both kill my creature, you know, do damage to it, and sacrifice to do something else? So in Magic 2020, not 2020, in Magic 2010, in the rules changes there, one of the biggest things is damage left of the stack. And so maybe one day I'll do a Magic 2020 podcast. But the idea is the 6th edition rules added damage to the stack. It made things with a made sacrifices effect a lot more powerful. And it did some other things. But that's when it got added there. The end step, by the way, has end of turn and cleanup. So things that happen at the end of turn. So end of turn allowed you to respond to it, so you could do instants and things at end of turn. Also, it's when end of turn things would trigger. If something happened end of turn, that's when it would trigger. And then cleanup, if the creature had damage but wasn't destroyed, the damage would get removed. You know, it would sort of clean up and everything goes back to its neutral state. So at the end of each turn, you know, whatever happened to your creature, if it didn't, if it wasn't a permanent effect, it would go away. And we have, once again, things, and something that happens at end of turn gets triggered at the end of turn step. Things that last until end of turn get cleaned up at cleanup. So at end of turn and until end of turn are slightly different things. Okay. Now, the other thing that happened in 6th edition rules were, the person who led the team was Bill Rose, now the VP of Tabletop Magic, Bill led it. I think Joel Mick was on the team. Most of the rules team at the time were on the team. I don't remember exactly when 6th edition rules were made. I'm not sure what the rules manager was exactly then. One of the things that I know Bill had been asking about was, were there rules that weren't serving their purpose? Meaning, Magic, especially in early alpha, there were a lot of rules that were that had kind of small purpose and like, do we need those rules? Interestingly, one of the rules that we didn't get rid of, because I and a few others fought to keep it, was mana burn. There's a rule in alpha that said, if at the end of any phase, if I have mana in my pool, I lose one life for each mana in my pool. And the reason for that is there are cards like Mana Flare. There's ways in which you can get more mana than you need. And the idea was, and there's some spells in alpha that even took advantage of this, trying to punish you for not managing your mana. Ironically, although I was one of the people that kept it from going away in 6th edition, it would leave in the 2010 change. And I was probably the lead person to get it removed. Anyway, once again, that's for another podcast, but we considered removing Mana Burn. We didn't. Some little rules we did remove a bunch of rules. And once again, for people that weren't playing for a long time, you might not know these rules ever existed. There was a rule in Alpha that said a creature that was tapped, a blocker that was tapped, did not deal damage. So, for example, early Magic had a card called Twiddle, where you could tap or untap a creature. It had a card called Ice Manipulator, which was an artifact that you could tap a creature. So if my opponent blocked my creature, let's say I have a 3-3, and they block with their 3-3, if I have a spell or ability that could tap that creature, say with Twiddle, the blocked tapper would not deal damage. It was a way that Twiddle allowed you to win, like, to win combat. I have a 3-3, you have a 3-3, oh, I tap your 3-3, your blocker, so now I will do 3 damage to you, but you won't do 3 damage to me. So it was a trick. It's one of the reasons, like, Twiddle used to be played a little more in games than it is now nowadays. But anyway, it didn't come up much, and much like the damage on the stack, it was very non-intuitive, and because we were changing over rules, something we always look at is Magic adds stuff all the time. We have to look for opportunities to remove things, and the real question is it carrying its weight? Is it doing enough that it's worth having that rule? And the tap blocker rule was really in the weeds. I mean, you know, if you were a diehard Magic player, like, you know, I knew the rule existed. I twiddled many a blocker. But it just wasn't necessary. And the other thing it did is it really punished blockers. One of the things is not that you don't want surprises to happen, and we have giant growths and things, but it kind of made people even more nervous to block than they are now. It just was deemed not necessary. So that rule got taken away. Okay, there also used to be a rule that said you lost the game only if you end a phase at zero life, which meant that there were combo decks that would do things and spend their life. And as long as you, before the phase ended, you got back up to a positive life total, you were fine. What we found was the people that used that rule almost exclusively were running combo decks, and it wasn't a rule. Like, it was a rule that only aided the kind of gameplay that we didn't necessarily need to make stronger. Like, I'm going to do infinite combo things and somehow beat you before my turn ends, but I'm going to take a lot of time to do that. It's not that we don't want combo decks to exist. They do exist, and they can exist. But we felt like this rule had no purpose other than to help combo decks, and we didn't feel a great need to help combo decks. So we changed it. So now you lose the game if a spell resolves and you're at zero. In the middle of a spell resolving, you technically can't go to zero if the spell takes you down and gets you back up. I don't know. There's a lot of spells that do that, but technically you can do that. But now, whenever a spell resolves, if you're at zero life, statement actions you will lose the game. Okay, another rule we had, artifacts. So static artifacts are artifacts that generate an ability. So there was a rule early on, not only did blockers turn off when tapped, meaning they didn't do damage, continuous artifacts, static abilities on artifact turned off if you tapped. I mean, in some level, it also turned off tap abilities, but you couldn't tap it if it was tapped. So that is kind of still true. It came about because there were two cards, Winter Orb and Howling Mine. Winter Orb only lets you untap one permanent a turn, and Howling Mine let each player draw an extra card during their draw step. So if you had an Icy Manipulator, you could tap Winter. So Winter Orb, you would tap before your turn, so all your things would untap, and then you let Winter Orb untap, and then the opponent. So you would tap at the end of your opponent's turn, and then your opponent only untapped one thing per turn, but you got to untap everything. And Howling Mine is I would draw two cards, and then I would tap the Howling Mine before my opponent's turn, so they only drew one card. So basically, this was designed to set up these combos, but it ended up being really problematic. The idea that anything could turn off, R&D constantly forgot about this. There's a whole deck, Sands of Time deck, where we just kind of forgot that you could shut off Sands of Time. Anyway, the idea that you could just shut off static abilities were like, that it causes more danger than anything. So what we did in 6th edition is we took the two cards that players enjoyed, which was Winter Orb and Howling Mine, and we changed the text to say, if this is untapped. Meaning those cards now shut off if you tap them because that's what the card said. Now, with hindsight, I don't think either Winter Orb or Howling Mine needed that text. I believe the combo with Ice Manipulator wasn't necessary. I mean, Anyway, just like with looking back, like I think both those cards are plenty fine without having to make them one-sided. Those cards definitely were built to not be one-sided, especially cost it not to be one-sided. So anyway, we changed the rules that artifacts turned off when tapped. Like I said, that was... some of the rules we changed were because... I mean, there's different reasons we changed the rules. Some of the rules were, look, we don't want you to learn a rule that just doesn't come up much, and this rule doesn't come up much enough to learn it. Sometimes it's like, well... And sometimes it was like, not only is it hard to learn, but it causes problems. The zero life rule caused problems with when I say problems, it just made combo decks even stronger, and they were already stronger. Yeah, they were strong enough, especially at the time we made the rule. And like tapped artifacts turning off was as much an R&D decision as anything. It made it a lot harder to design static artifacts when you could turn them off. It just made them a lot harder to design. The other thing that got done was modes were now made such that you had to say choose one to pick a mode. There's a lot. I mean, I didn't get into all this. There were some language changes that happened. I mean, obviously, stuff like interrupt went away. Magic 2010 did more of renaming basic things. Like, that's when Battlefield got named. But 6th edition, I think Haste got named in 6th edition. So before that, it was written out. But for the first time, I talked about this in my article, but I'll talk about it here since not all you read my article. One of the things that happened over time was, you know, we definitely figured out the abilities that we liked to use a lot. And then we realized that, like, some vocabulary is okay. And if you're going to use something every set, that's where you want to spend your vocabulary words. Like, okay, if I'm going to use haste all the time, okay, let's name it. Haste, by the way, was called Celerity internally by R&D, named after the ability in Vampire the Eternal Struggle. Celerity just means speed. But we ended up changing the name to haste because no one knew what Celerity meant. So to give a little context, I'm almost to work here. 6th edition... So let me talk about what happened when 6th edition came out. So we announced we were changing the rules. We do the 6th edition rules. And the backlash when we announced it was huge. I think the reason was it just seemed like, hey, people knew how to play Magic and people knew their little tricks and we were sort of messing with the basics of it. So what we actually did was, at the time was the Duelist Invitational, later the Magic Invitational, was being held in Barcelona that year. And so we had that event held under the 6th edition rules. Randy Bueller had actually written a book on 6th edition rules. And Randy was actually in that event. And so Randy and I were helping everybody sort of make sure they understood 6th edition rules. The event went pretty smoothly. And I wrote a whole article about 20 things that'll kill Magic. This was one of the 20 things. Change the 6th edition rules, just because change is scary and it requires you to learn things and the game now works a little bit differently than you know. And when you spend a lot of time and energy learning the nuances, hey, you know, you moved my cheese sort of thing. Like, I knew how that worked. Why'd you change it? But once people got used to 6th edition rules, once it sort of became the standard, I got a lot of players come back to me who had complained to me about the change and said, okay, you're right. This is much better. And now 6th edition, like, this is why I feel bad I didn't include it in the article. 6th edition rules, I think, was a major upgrade in the game, and that... there's a lot of different ways that R&D has improved the technology of the game over time. I talk a lot about card design, but the system design, rules, for example, is a big part. You know, adapting the rules. And part of changing the rules is, part of it is allowing consistency so that people can understand how things work. But another important part was, if we're going to make more cards and we're going to build on Magic, you want a very stable foundation. You don't want every card... If every card requires you making a new rule, that becomes unwieldy. And as is, Magic has 27,000 plus cards, and the rule book is inches thick. And that's after 6th edition rules, right? So, you know, we understood that it was important for just the health of the game. Not just the play of the game, that's also important, but the health of the game and the design of the game, that we needed to consolidate some things. We needed to, you know, trim some rules that weren't necessary. We needed to consolidate things. And so the end result of the sixth edition rules is, you know, it really sort of did something that Magic needed. I think a lot of the early years of Magic were us taking what was at the core an awesome game and adapting it to what it became, which was a phenomenon. You know, we had to change the game to make it something. Like, when Richard first made Magic, the idea was maybe, you know, a year or two later, maybe you make the first expansion. The idea that there'll be many expansions every year, that we would make thousands of Magic cards, you know, that was not something that Richard... Richard knew there would be more cards. He knew there would be expansions, but not at the rate that Magic would end up being. Nor at the time, you know... I mean, everybody wants to hope their game lasts. It becomes a game of eternity. But you don't know that when you make a game. And most games, you know, most games don't last that long. The average game, you know, 95% of games come and go. And I might be kind claiming that 5% stay. It might be closer to 1%. But most games come and go. And so, you know, Richard was trying to make a robust system that could be built upon, but he had no idea how much it would need to be built upon. And so a lot of early Magic was expanding on that to sort of fixing up the system to make it more robust so that we could build on it. And there is, you know, 6th edition was crucial to that. I talk about how Bill Rose and his contributions to Magic, and he's done a lot for Magic. One of the big feathers in the cap for him was his lead of 6th edition rules. And I think that 6th edition, it's funny, like I said, if you play Magic now, it's just the way the rules work, or a lot of the way the rules work. But that wasn't always the case. I feel sort of like what Bill is to the rules, a lot of ways I am to the color pie. That I said, hey, this is a system that really needs, that is really cool in the concept of what it is, but it needs a lot of execution to make it to make it this amazing thing that will last the test of time. But anyway, guys, I hope you enjoyed my walkthrough 6th edition. But I am now at work. So we all know what that means this is the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking Magic, it's time for me to make it Magic. So I'll see you guys next time. Bye-bye.